Numbers chapter 15. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land where you are to live, which I am giving you, then make an offering by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering or a sacrifice to fulfill a special vow, or as a free will offering or in your appointed times, to make a soothing aroma to the Lord from the herd or from the flock. The one who presents his offering shall present to the Lord a grain offering of 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/4 of a hin of oil. And you shall prepare wine for the drink offering, 1/4 of a hin with the burnt offering or for the sacrifice for each lamb. Or for a ram you shall prepare as a grain offering 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/10 of a hin of oil. And for the drink offering, you shall offer 1/3 of a hin of wine as a soothing aroma to the Lord. When you prepare a bull as a burnt offering or a sacrifice to fulfill a special vow, or for peace offerings to the Lord, then you shall offer with the bull a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/2 of a hin of oil. And you shall offer as a drink offering 1/2 a hin of wine as an offering by fire, as a soothing aroma to the Lord. Thus it shall be done for each ox or for each ram, or for each of the male lambs or of the goats. According to the number that you prepare, so you shall do for everyone according to their number. All who are native shall do these things in this manner, in presenting an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord. If an alien sojourns with you, or one who may be among you throughout your generations, and he wishes to make an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord, just as you do, so he shall do. As for the assembly, there shall be one statute for you and for the alien who sojourns with you, a perpetual statute throughout your generations. As you are, so shall the alien be before the Lord. There is to be one law and one ordinance for you and for the alien who sojourns with you." Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when you enter the land where I bring you, then it shall be that when you eat the food of the land, you shall lift up an offering to the Lord. Of the first of your dough, you shall lift up a cake as an offering of the threshing floor, so you shall lift it up. From the first of your dough, you shall give to the Lord an offering throughout your generations. But when you unwittingly fail and do not observe all these commandments which the Lord has spoken to Moses, even all that the Lord has commanded through you, Moses, from the day when the Lord gave commandment and onward throughout your generations, then it shall be, if it is done intentionally, without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one bull for a burnt offering as a soothing aroma to the Lord, with its grain offering and its drink offering, according to the ordinance, and one male goat for a sin offering. Then the priest shall make atonement for all the congregation of the sons of Israel, and they will be forgiven, for it was an error, and they have brought their offering, an offering by fire to the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord for their error. So all the congregation of the sons of Israel will be forgiven, with the alien who sojourns among them, for it happened to all the people through error. If one person sins unintentionally, then he shall offer a one-year-old female goat for a sin offering. The priest shall make atonement before the Lord for the person who goes astray when he sins unintentionally, making atonement for him that he may be forgiven. You shall have one law for him who does anything unintentionally, for him who is native among the sons of Israel, and for the alien who sojourns among them. But the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people. Because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment, that person shall be completely cut off. His guilt will be on him. Now while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation. And they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp." So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. The Lord also spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel and tell them that they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and that they shall put on the tassel on each corner a cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and to remember all the commandments of the Lord, so as to do them and not follow after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you played the harlot, so that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy to your God. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God."
Any comments?
Curiosity. When it's the whole congregation, they used a male goat. If it's an individual, they could use a female goat. Why the difference?
Okay. Why would you use a male goat if it's a whole congregation? Or male, was it a male bull or goat?
Well, the male bull and a male goat are both
all right.
In that passage.
I would think it would represent Christ, and Christ came as a man, in the image of a man. Not, he didn't come in the image of a woman.
Then why sacrifice a she-goat?
Because a she-goat for an individual would represent the Holy Spirit coming down.
That's an interpretation. That's not what it really is saying there. All right.
Well, in Kabbalah,
The bull represents what? Or a male bull represents what? Why it's so important for the congregation and it's only one? We're talking about a community doing something, not an individual. And so why is it important that a community must offer a bull? What's the purpose of offering a bull? What does a bull represent?
Prosperity.
A nation.
Sorry, what?
A nation.
Nation.
A nation?
Prosperity.
Okay. You remember the Israelites came out of Egypt, and what'd they do?
They built the golden calf.
Okay. A male bull. Okay. The bull is a representation in history. What does a bull represent? When they had their whole offerings, always a bull offering. And it's a free will offering. It's one you give freely. The bull represents when you are in a position of authority. If you are a leader, all right, you must offer a bull. If you are not a leader, you don't offer a bull. You offer a she-goat. All right? Since they don't, in the community-wise, it's the elders of that community who are responsible for what was going on. And if they did it unintentionally, did not know the situation came up, then they are the ones that must offer the bull for the community as a whole because it represents leadership. Bull is the one that represents leadership, the ones who are in charge. When they had the first part of Deuteronomy, we had all of the tribes of Israel, the leadership of Israel, give up a bull for each one of the tribes. Remember that? And at Feast Tabernacles, in Maine, you have how many? 70 bulls representing the 70 nations. The bull represents leadership. Now it has to do, when we think of a bull, what do you think about the animal?
Strong,
mighty, powerful. And that's basically what it is a basically representation of. What does a she-goat represent? Or a sheep, female sheep represent?
The flock, the people.
What's worth more? The bull or the sheep, the female sheep?
The bull.
The female sheep is worth more. Yeah, you make money off of her, but you don't make money off the bull. All the bull does is get the reproduction. But without the she-goat or the she-mate, they don't have that reproduction going, and it keeps on, and you have a loss of income. So you have a more serious loss of income if you have to give up a she-goat. Now, he talked about someone who is did it unintentionally, but as an individual. There's two different prices had to be paid, one for the community and one for an individual here. In this particular example, by the way.
But they also talked about giving a male goat for the sin offering.
Oh, okay. Why the goat. What does the goat represent?
It's always for sin offerings.
Yeah, goats are always for sin offerings, but for the whole
congregation. What was the first goat that was killed? Goat or a ram?
Oh, was it Abraham's? When?
Sin offering has to do with Isaac. So you have a ram or a he goat that is going to be the one that represents the sin offering. That's all that represents. A price is to be paid, and the sin offering is a representation of Isaac. Now, what did Isaac represent in that symbolism?
The promise, Messiah.
It was substituted once, or what?
Messiah.
The promise. Messiah. Now, interesting what Abraham said. He didn't say, "I will sub." He may have the substitute would be a sheep. The substitute would be a ram. Substitution of sin is the ram. When we think of Passover, the Passover is not the sacrifice of your sin. What does the Passover sacrifice for? What does the word Passover mean?
Covering.
It is, Pesach means protection. Mm-hmm. The protector. So what did the lamb protect the Israelites from?
Yeah.
The destroyer.
The what?
The destroyer.
From the wrath of God. Got to remember that. He didn't just protect it from the destroyer, he protected from the wrath of God. Now, the goat doesn't protect you from the wrath of God. You know what I'm saying so far? The goat pays the price for sin. That's why he had the Day of Atonement. It is the goat that pays the price for sin and not the lamb. It's the lamb that takes away the sins of the world. How does a lamb take away the sins of the world?
By blocking the wrath of God from
by blocking the wrath of God coming against the world. Daniel.
But the story with regards to Passover, it says you can choose a lamb from the animal, from the sheep or the goat. It didn't matter which one.
Correct. But the primary thing we're talking about is that primarily we're looking at this gives an option if you don't have a sheep. Then you can use the goat. But we're talking about the purpose of the sheep compared to a ram. Yes.
Why is the goat? Why are you saying the goat represents the
payment for sin?
Payment for sin. What about Abraham and Isaac with sin? That wasn't sin.
No. I thought it was sin. What was? Again, Isaac didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Neither did Abraham do anything wrong.
Exactly.
Okay, so the sacrifice of Isaac was representation of paying the price for sin. He would have been killed for the price of payment of sin. Period. But he provided a ram in substitution of it because he said the Lord would provide. And he didn't provide, he provided the ram. You got a perfect son, Isaac. And the perfect son has to pay for the sins of others. A perfect son has to pay the sins for others. An imperfect son cannot pay for the sins of others. A perfect son has to pay for the sins of others. And if that sin has been paid for, then the others are no longer held accountable for their sins.
So that in itself is representation of Yeshua.
Correct.
So that's what that whole scenario is.
The whole scenario of what the sin offering of the ram was always, or the bull, in the goat, this case the goat, because the Day of Atonement, they used the goat for a purpose. What does the goat do? One of them is killed for the price of sin. Mm-hmm. The other one, what happens to it?
It led him away and sent outwards.
What was put upon him?
To take away the sin.
To take away sin, transgression, and inequity. Mm-hmm. That's what that second live goat does. It was a representation of the Messiah taking away sins, transgressions, and inequity. That's what represents. It's not that hard to understand why there's two goats. You can't well have the one goat that was killed come back alive and then have the sins put upon it and take it away. It says the first sin was an atonement. The first goat was an atonement for their sins, and so was the second one an atonement for the sins. They're covering. It's a removal or the elimination of it. So we have these animals have a representation of meaning certain things. When you go through the book of Leviticus, which you have in detail, if you were a high priest and you sinned, what must you pay? You don't pay, in this case, a goat. You must, now the bull becomes the sin offering. If you are a king, it's the bull that becomes a sin offering. If you were not, then your offering was different. Your offering was that goat. Alright? More is expected of a leadership. What did you just say? Too much is given, much is to be expected. So the greater position you're in, when you look at the book of Leviticus, the greater position you're in, the greater your price you pay.
Yeah, but you said the female sheep was worth more than the bull.
Correct. So for the individual person. That was an individual person. An individual person who's not leadership, in this particular case, that's what they pay.
Right, but you just said the burden is greater for the higher you are.
Correct.
But yet they pay a bull, and the individual pays a female. That female sheep is worth more. So
right.
It's
for that individual, but not for the nation. Leadership is held more accountable for the nation as a whole. A high priest is accountable for what his job is supposed to do. If I'm not a high priest, I do not offer a bull. I offer.
I'm not asking that.
What?
You're saying the female sheep is worth more.
Right.
Okay, so an individual, if they sin, they have to do with a female sheep.
Right.
But the government and or the leadership, if they sin, they're out.
Okay. In the book of Leviticus, we go to a series of offerings. You have to have the whole offering, then you have to have the minha offering, then you have to have the sin offering, then you have the shalom offering. You understand what I'm saying so far? It's not just, all I have to do is pay a bull. No. If you have to pay a whole offering first. If I'm high priest, a whole offering is not a price. You give the whole offering. If I'm high priest, a minha offering. And if I'm a sin offering, instead of giving a sheep, I'm given a bull offering as my sin offering.
So the leadership has to do the bull first, and then they have to do the sheep.
No. The sheep is a totally different. It comes down into this biblically speaking, it's really kind of hard to explain, but there are four different offerings, and they have to be done in precise order. Sometimes if we sin, we say, okay, God, they must have just sacrificed a goat, that was it, and walked away. No, they had to go through a series of things to do something to reach and have the opportunity to come to that word of shalom, being at peace with God. You have to give that whole offering. Then you come along and you give the minha offering. Along with that, you give the sin offering. Then after that, you give the shalom offering. And if your shalom offering isn't at peace, God will not accept any of it. Okay? Your last offer you are to offer to God is the shalom offering. In a series when you transgress the law.
I understand that. That's not what I'm asking.
Well, yeah, because maybe perhaps what you're thinking about is on two different scales here. What he's talking about is people themselves. And then you've got the nation. It's not like, you know, the nation is not offering something that's as valuable as what the person is offering. It's that the nation is offering something that symbolizes a nation. The bull symbolizes a nation. That's why the high priest, as a representative of the community, is offering a bull. Not because it's less valuable, but that's what it symbolizes. The bull symbolizes...
That makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Daniel.
Sorry, I'm going along with what he was saying. Yeah, the bull does symbolize the nation, and the female goat, or she...
Even the more valuable...
...symbolizes a common person.
Right, okay, got it.
If you do it by a dollar amount, the scenario doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Because the bull is supposed to be a young bull, meaning it's under a year old. The goat is supposed to be a young female. It has not given birth. It's under... So I don't know how what their standard life cycle for a goat is, but I'm suspecting that they're a year old. Both of them are very, very young. Both of them have minimal value. A bull is of no value until it can reproduce anyway, or just for food. Female goat is of no value until she can reproduce. So both of them are at their state, which they're monetary-wise not worth a whole lot.
Okay.
Now, she could potentially be worth more, but that's not a human.
But it has more to do with
symbolism.
Yeah.
You're dealing with a young bull is the symbol of the person who did it. Because the whole point is, this animal pays for my sin. If I am a bull, so to speak, because I'm a ruler, and I offer a dove... Well, that dove does not symbolize me, so it didn't pay for anything that I did.
Okay.
The bull symbolized me, and also if I'm a butcher person, the small, young, female goat symbolizes me.
That's up to you.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
And that doesn't still answer the question I asked. For the nation, they also, for the sin offering in this passage, the sin offering for the nation was a male goat, but for an individual, it's a female goat. And I still... What's the difference in the symbolism there then? Why is it a male goat for a nation but a female goat for just an individual?
Well, I thought Richard explained it pretty good. A female goat reproduces. And so therefore, if you take his livelihood for his sin, I don't know, it makes sense to me.
It's like when a person, individual, does something, he still has to pay the price. And the price he has to pay is, like Daniel said, this is going to substitute. You're going to pay now with the female sheep. But a community is not affected by the loss of one animal. But you as an individual are affected more so by that one animal. Daniel?
The community has to offer both.
Both.
The bull
and
the
sin offering.
As well as the goats.
Right.
The individual, just the goat.
Right.
So there is a higher payment to the community, because the bull still is a... As
symbolism of...
Symbol is... Is it symbol? It's symbol of
the community of sin, the community has to pay. As a whole.
But you're right, it is male in both cases. The community never pays a female.
Never. There's no example anywhere where the female is a price for the community or a leader, maybe. Yes.
Now, this is strictly my personal opinion, which doesn't mean we're worth a whole lot. But I look at it to where, all right, a community itself, congregation, does not have the ability to grow. All right, we look at a congregation increases in size. So the congregation isn't growing. Individuals are. All right. So a community, it like males, cannot reproduce. They cannot grow. They can be themselves, but then get bigger by bulking as they age, but they cannot expand. Females can expand. Individuals can expand. Meaning I can talk to another individual and bring them to God. I have that ability. A congregation can't really do that. They can be there as a support structure. But this is so
that's basic,
I look
yeah.
at them as they don't have the ability to increase like an individual can. I can sit there and I hate to use a term, but convert or work with one-on-one individuals that are outside of God, have nothing to do with God whatsoever, and expand and increase that way. Just like a female goat can reproduce children.
You're increasing the community when you do that.
A congregation cannot double itself. Okay, I have a congregation here. We're now going to spawn another congregation here. Now we have two. That doesn't work. Congregations expand by splitting themselves off. That's not the same as an individual bringing someone to God. Congregation expands by dividing up. That's how I look at it. Now, I'm not saying I'm right, but that's how I look at why one is female, has the ability to increase in over and over and over again, while the other one is male, which does not have that ability.
That's a really good point. The other, what came to me was that the male might be a representation of strength, and because, you know, in a congregation or something, the male might represent the strength, but the female represents the ability to reproduce and to grow,
or in the responsibility of learning to submit to the community.
But all the, so the sacrificing of the or congregation or the nation sacrificing some of the strength might, you know, it would be better than sacrificing the ability to grow.
It's not well explained.
No.
Honestly, the Bible's not
telling. Not even Judaism has a good answer to it.
We
just know that from.
Yeah, essentially, guess we're trying to figure out what makes sense. And then
not all sacrifices represent the Messiah.
Right.
Some of those represent us or you have to give up something. Okay. Not all sacrifices represent because technically speaking, there's only two sacrifices that are required. Yes.
As we sit here and talk about these sacrifices and such, what is it that we do with this now? Like in Romans chapter 12 and Hebrews chapter 13, they talk about that the sacrifices of people of God. And you know, when we look at that, what and we look at this here in Numbers chapter 15. What relation does...
Are you talking about the first section of this thing, or what she was referring to?
Well, our whole discussion here with unintentional sins,
right.
these offerings, and offerings in general, what relation does this have to us now? Like, as we read here in say it's Romans...
It's the 12th chapter?
12, yeah, that's right. Romans chapter 12 says here, therefore I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to the Lord. This is your spiritual act of worship. And then later,
now, what happens? You're looking at this word, Greek word, sacrifices. And like we think about something has to be killed, and it, you know, in the book of Numbers, we're talking about something that has to be killed for something that has been gone awry. In the book of Romans, they're talking about sacrifice, not talking about sacrifice of something that's gone awry.
Well, like in Hebrews chapter 15, it mentions here, or 13, Hebrews 13 verse 15. Therefore, Yeshua, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, a fruit of lips that confess his name, and do not forget to do good and to share with others, okay. For with such sacrifices God is pleased.
Correct.
That's the that would be in the spiritual realm versus the physical realm.
When we look at the physical thing here of the sacrifices for doing something that's amiss, all right, as you in your life today, when you do something that's amiss, what is it that you have to pay to correct the amiss, the unknowing one? Now you become aware of it. We don't kill an animal anymore. What do we do?
Well, if it's been against another human being, you would go to that human being and
you're restitute. You must pay restitution.
Right.
The restitution here is, and the Torah, the restitution for someone who did something amiss, didn't know it, he has to pay a price. He has to pay something in exchange. The very same thing happens to you and to me. When we transgress against somebody, we are to make atonement for, if I use the terminology. We must go back and talk with them, and if they, quote, take us to court, what did Jesus say? Agree with them while you're on the way. Pay the price, otherwise you're going to pay more than you had before. When you transgress, go against something, you break something that offends another human being or breaks the commandments of God, somebody has to pay. We're not talking about sins of your sins. That we're talking about sins of the death. We're talking about just plain sin, missing the mark, not getting it right, doing an error. And when you look at these things, he said the community has done an error. It must pay a price. If a congregation, if our particular congregation as a whole did something that was offensive or does harm to the people who run and own this place, what must we do?
Fix it up.
We have to pay restitution. And the best thing we can do is pay as quick as we can and settle as fast as we can, and knowing. Why? Because there's something we have done amiss. All right. Now, if we go out now, right, and deliberately do destruction to this place, we should pay the full price.
You can get kicked out.
Or pay double.
Pay the full price, period. Whatever the courts require, we as a community would have to pay the full price completely. You know what I'm saying? All these little things we see in the Torah about paying a price for something is because something has went amiss. Something went wrong. You missed the mark. You transgressed. You did an inequity. Now we must come through and you must pay the price. The more important you are, I'm sorry, the greater the price is going to be. And even Jesus mentioned that very same terminology. A complete comparison to it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So we look at all these sacrifices, we look at all, and now sometimes, now when you give the one about gifts, Romans talks about gifts, and Hebrews talks about gifts. Now it's entirely different. The Bible allows that, and it's called a zivach offering. An offering that you give, it's a free will offering, and you can give it as a gift, or as a thanksgiving offering, or as you used last week, the word fellowship offering. That's entirely different. You can actually bring in your animal. Of course, with God, it has to be associated with the right kind of animal. You don't bring in a pig, but you bring in the kind of animal that God says, that's what I want the community to partake of, and then you can have that with the community. That is a gift. It's a free will gift, a free will offering. It's not a sacrifice in the sense of sin, transgression, inequity, or missing the mark, or anything of nature.
So, what would be the way to describe this? You're talking to someone here today, and they're struggling. They're reading through Leviticus and again the Numbers, and they're like, what is this? Is this a different God here from the one I see in the New Testament? What is this thing about the animals and the different types of animals and the males versus the females and the goats and bulls and doves and all sorts. Okay. So what on earth does this have to do with Messiah?
The elevations. The clean animals were elevated upward. God elevated certain animals upward and said these things are clean. The others are unclean. Therefore, you will give the clean or the better of the group. You're going to give more. So it comes into the New Testament and you're still stuck with the same problem. So when someone comes in and says, what on earth is Leviticus talking about? You pay a price. You restitution on things. For a price, you've done something. Something has to be paid. God is not like a freeloader. He doesn't like someone saying, well, I'm sorry. And walk away from the entire scene. In a lot of places in the Christian world, they do just that. If I sinned against him, knowingly or unknowingly to him, in the Christian world, and by general, I say, oh, Father, please forgive me for transgressing against Jeff. Oh, good. And I walk away. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. I have come aware that I have transgressed against Jeff. Therefore, I must go to Jeff, who may not even know that I've done it. And I have to confess with what he wishes to do back to me for me transgressing or harming him. Do you understand what I'm saying, the word confess?
No.
Word confess means you agree with the judgment. So I go to Jeff and I say, Jeff, this is what I've done. How can I restore? He comes back and says, I want $3.5 million. Okay, $3.5 million. I agree. That's confession. With what I have done, the harm I've done to you, because damage has been done to him. Okay? So he is allowed for complete restitution. In the Christian world, we don't think of it that way. We come to Jeff and say, Jeff, by the way, would you please forgive me? And first thing Jeff has to say is, okay, I forgive you. But really, he says, I will want my $1.5 million here, Daniel.
Though we would all like to be prosperous on your dime, the Bible does give us some limitations that you cannot take more than what
that the damage is. Now that comes into the threefold, sevenfold, up to sevenfold.
Yeah,
depends upon the damage. If I took his shoes.
He can't sit there and require your house.
He could require, I want 7 pair of shoes back. And so I have to give him 7 pair of shoes. It may cost me $150 per shoe, but if I damage his house, deliberately so, I should give him enough to have him to buy 3 houses. Not just one, but 3. That's why I have insurance.
The house damage beyond you.
So beyond,
if you,
right.
If you bust a hole in the wall, it's repairable.
Correct.
$300, you didn't buy 3 houses.
No. Everything has to be relative to the damage, okay?
Yeah.
So. Basically, what it teaches you, what the Torah is teaching you there, have we blown that part yet, Daniel? I don't think we have. About how much you must pay. Yes.
Even in our system of law, we have that idea of punitive damages where you...
That's correct.
On the one hand, you pay the actual damages, but then you also have punitive, and that's whatever the court decides, 2 times, 3 times, whatever.
Whatever the case may be, yeah. And so those are grounds. I mean, that's biblical background, biblical support on those things. We may not like punitive damages, but it's biblical. We may... Now, our court system may not... judge it according to what God would judge it on punitive damages. That's a different issue. Yes.
Getting back to my original question about someone reading this and about Leviticus and seeing the things, obviously there are the things in there about restitution, you know, if you steal somebody's stuff, you have to repay it with a punitive amount on top of it. But where does... If you're trying to explain to somebody, where do the animals of all this, of the offerings and this and that, where do those line up with New Testament times? So, like, is it when you read...
Wait.
Hold on just a moment. When you read Hebrews, and it says that one offering was offered once for all, is that only talking about the Day of Atonement? Is it talking about all sacrifices in general? Is it just that God put an end to the temple in 70 AD, and that's the reason why, if the temple were to show up again,
okay,
would things get restarted? Would they have to be restarted?
Okay, Jack, at the latter part of your question, I don't know about that one. I would look like Ezekiel, the answer is yes. But I don't have a full answer to that one. But to answer your first question, you talk about Hebrews, it is only talking about the Day of Atonement. It's not talking about all sacrifices of any kind, just a specific one. And it's the Day of Atonement which does this away. Entirely different picture there.
So if a common Christian interpretation is that the sacrifices are obsolete. Is that a correct?
That is a correct observation. Sacrifices, as far as what we know, biblically speaking, yes, they're obsolete in that sense, because you have to bring your sin offering to whom?
The high priest.
And right now there is no high priest except the Messiah. Now, lo and behold, technically speaking, as a spiritual world, if you bring it to the high priest, what must the high priest do according to the Torah?
Make atonement for you.
But every time there is a sin that's a relationship to, that involves the priesthood.
This is involving God, right?
Involving God, not the priesthood doesn't handle all between he and I. That's different. I have to make celibate with him. Has nothing to do with the priesthood. And Matthew, about going before the judge, has nothing to do with the priesthood. They had the Sanhedrin they went before. They went before civil courts, civil situations. But when you bring something to God, it's because you have done something transgressing against God directly. Now you have to ask yourself, if I have transgressed against him in an evil manner or a wicked manner, then I transgress against God at the same time. So when someone comes on and say, yeah, the sacrifices are eliminated or not, no longer are enforced, that is a physical animal. Because back in those days, even during the time of the Messiah, the main source of wealth didn't come from Bank America. It didn't come from Fort Knox. It didn't come from, oh, I'm working on my computer. It came from the land. It came from the earth. And technically speaking today, all the wealth you have, you own physically, true wealth, comes from the ground. Everything you have from the ground. We think, well, we don't live in an agricultural society. We don't live in a I don't have any cows or any herds or anything like that. That's true, you don't. What does the Torah tell you to do?
It all comes from the ground. I mean,
all comes from
the ground. Even your computer, I mean, the stuff in your computer comes out of the ground.
We're getting past what I want to go into the thing about the offering bread to God here. But more difficult to explain that.
This is an important thing, because that is where this division, you know, Thomas Aquinas made this division between the moral, the ceremonial, and the judicial parts of the law. And thus is able to chuck two of them and keep one of them.
He's allowed, a person is allowed to separate if they wish to separate it.
Right. But
okay.
This is along one of the lines where they separate it. Has a sacrifice? Okay, chuck it. So anything where it has anything to do with animals, you chuck it. Mm-hmm. Rip those pages out, they're obsolete. So the question is do certain things become obsolete, or do they still remain in force, but you take the sacrifice and it shifts into a different gear, and you almost get a one-to-one relationship where it says sacrifice animal, then it means this.
Once again, when it comes to relationships, transgression toward God, is still in effect.
Well, then how do you do it?
By the Messiah. What is he going to offer in your place?
Himself.
He offers himself.
Each time.
All right. Does it mean when Jesus died on the cross, that didn't free me from no obligations toward God at all? In fact, that made me more, if I could use this expression, more binding to the laws of God, if I can use that phrase. Now, because of that, I am more than ever before required to respond to the Word of God.
Is it because that the ordinance of death that was upon us, that is signified by the sacrificing of various animals for the different offerings, that, you know, the Messiah has come in as the Pesach, basically blocking that sentence from coming to us.
From that sentence coming to us, right?
So his offering then is taking the place of all the sacrifices of the things that were to die, basically as a substitution for us.
That's all.
Yeah, so there you go.
He didn't die for I robbed this guy of some antelopes.
Yeah.
He didn't die for that. Because the Torah fulfills, in there when you read about the Torah, about when you rob something from somebody, you must pay them back threefold, fivefold, sevenfold. That doesn't, all it does is pay the person back for what you've done to them.
Right.
That's not a death sentence. Thou shalt not steal has to do with a specific death sentence on a specific situation. Not everything in the Torah that says thou shalt not steal, that every time you steal something, you get the death sentence, because it says restitution is available. So what is it that you steal that is accountable to death? What part? John, book of John, 1 John, he says, I want you to pray for people. I think it was John, maybe it was James. I want you to pray for brethren, for people who have sinned, but not unto those that sin unto death. Don't pray for. That's strange. Why would he say that for? There's two different categories. Two entirely different worlds out there. Two different transgressions taking place. What is sin unto death compared to sin that you can pray for?
Sin unto death is sin against God, and sin that's redeemable.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Brother.
Those are sin unto death. So you're going to steal something. What are you going to steal? You're going to steal something from your fellow man?
No, from God.
Or are you stealing something from God? When you steal something from God, what happens?
Death sentence.
Death sentence. When you murder somebody, why is it a death sentence?
Because you didn't murder God.
You murdered an image of God. All right? When you commit adultery, what are you doing? Why is it a death sentence?
You're committing adultery against God.
Okay.
The word of God has taken two people and put them together.
And you have torn asunder, you have twisted it, polluted it, turned it upside down and says this is right. You've taken the word of God and deliberately distorted it. That's what the death sentence. Coveting. Wow, it's a hard one to come by. Thou shalt not covet. How to overcome that one? It's one of the hardest ones of the bunch, isn't it? And it's also the tenth one. It's also the tenth one. Now, what does 10 represent? The bottom line. You reach down to the bottom. This, the 10th is the bottom line. Now, why tie this? Why it's only 10? Because that's the bottom line. You don't go above it or below it. 10 is it. 10 is that marking spot.
Well, I mean, the coveting kind of covers from number 5 on down. Because the underlying thing of coveting is wanting something that you do not have. And
that's why you break one of the least commandments, you break them all.
Yeah.
You stumble real quick, real fast. Those are sins unto death.
Why is coveting a death sentence?
Why would it not be?
It seems so minor.
It's actually the start of all the rest of them.
Yeah.
A spark that kind of can instigate the rest of them, whether it's stealing or adultery or, you know, anything else. It's the spark.
Just all those 10 feet upon another real, real quick.
Yeah. And where does it become, at what point does covet become covet versus...
Covet.
Versus, that's nice.
Okay, we'll put this iteration. I'll clarify this way. When Jesus had his last Passover, the last dinner.
Right.
In Greek, it's very clear. And he says, I have coveted, I have lusted, I have desired this one above all else. Now, did he break the law?
No.
What was he?
I'll tell you what he would, if he wanted to break the law, is he accelerated it. He did something to manipulate to make that item his. Quite similar to, I think, Ahab and
Jezebel.
He wanted the vineyard. So I want the vineyard. How are we going to get that vineyard? Hey, Jezebel. And she said, oh, yes.
Strategize.
Allow someone else to do my bidding to get what I want. You've actively taken a role. Beyond a, wow, that's a really nice vineyard. I want to go grow my own. Well, that's coveting too, but it's not a...
But that's not a
I'm not going to manipulate, well, so I will get what
you
that
see, manipulation.
Is.
I mean, have
do the right
same thing with David.
Correctly.
Yeah.
There's a difference between desire and covet.
That's what I'm... Where do you draw the line between
you
the two?
You want one like it. You don't want that one.
Right.
Because to get that one, you're probably going to have to kill them.
Or steal it. Or steal it.
Basically, coveting implies
that
underhandedness to get.
Ah, now you got it.
That's not just desire or want.
I want a Cadillac. My neighbor's got a Cadillac. You don't go over and say, I'm going to take your Cadillac. I want yours. Therefore, I'm going to maneuver to get it. Well, another thing go down. So I like it, just like it. Where'd you get it? Oh, I got down the Cadillac dealer. Oh, I got a Cadillac dealer to go buy one.
Yeah.
That's different.
That's a different.
That's not as. Phil.
David coveted, what's his name's wife?
Bathsheba.
Yeah,
for
sure.
There you go. There's
and what was her price he had to pay?
The life of his son.
The life of the child. That's pretty heavy. I wouldn't want to pay that. You know, did not a king get it after him? Well, they're pretty God mean business, you know.
Yeah, well, they did their own
thing. Well, one thing you do, you straighten out the country before the country even gets established. You make the man in charge pay a big, expensive price. And it wasn't a goat. And it wasn't a bull. It was his son.
Speaking about
his wife also paid. But Bathsheba paid for it too.
Speaking of sins unto death, one of the big ones that people like to cast aspersions upon the Torah is starting there in verse 32 about the guy out there collecting wood. And then get the death sentence. They're like, man, that's kind of harsh. All he was out there collecting wood, and how you get stoned?
Now, why was it written? Daniel.
My opinion, it was because it was intentional.
Intentional.
I mean, if I'm going to, I know I have to cook on Sabbath because I will, if I don't cook, I'll probably have indeed. What am I going to go do? Well, I will wait all the way until Saturday and then I'll go collect my wood. Wait a minute. I could have collected any of the week. I purposefully, intentionally sinned against God by waiting until Saturday. Just show that, see, yes, I am justified in going to get this confession today.
Well, maybe his watch stopped working.
The number of sunsets.
Because verse 30 explains the whole situation. Okay, and listen carefully how it's written, because this statement basically makes a statement, but they did not know that until after the man did what he did. In one sense, we're seeing the man do something. And in a sense, then you go to God and say, what do we do? Okay, listen how it's worded. And he says, but the person who does anything presumptuously, that is, deliberately, out of defiance, that's different. Whether he's native or a stranger, that no one brings a reproach to the Lord and shall be cut off from amongst his people. But he has despised the word of God. He made mockery of it. He made it like it's a joke. He made it to a point where I don't care what God thinks, says, or does. That's when you make a mockery. And no, God can't be mocked. Bad news if he's mocked, okay? He should be completely cut off from that person. Now, I mean, there's two different situations here. Verse 30 talks about someone who's native, born, or stranger that does something presumptuously. Verse 31 is worded differently. Listen carefully to that verse. Because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken my commandment, that person should be cut off completely. One is being cut off from amongst the people, the other one is being cut off completely. Two different situations here. That's why the Apostle Paul and John talked about having, what's that word we use in Christian world called disfellowship? If someone is transgressing, going contrary, you must do something. You must disassociate yourself with that person. And we have that example in Corinthians, where that situation says, put him out. Okay? He did it presumptuously, yes. What was his payment? Cut off from the congregation. Now, verse 31 is a little bit different because in Greek, Hebrew, we're talking about something that's a little bit differently. If he does it presumptuously and in despite of the word of the Lord. Now, that's different. Now, he's not only cut off from the people, he is cut off completely. Now, verse 32. Now, the situation builds up. So it's kind of interesting, like we have a law here, knowing what to do, but then all of a sudden this thing showed up, and this guy did what he did, and what did they do? They didn't know what to do about it. Wait a minute, what did the law just already say to do? Well, I think it was an afterthought. Yes?
Yeah, I don't think the law was completely clear on the situation, at least not initially. And that because of the first two verses, it does not specify the person who must die.
Correct.
The next one, 32, well, he did, probably, verses 30 and 31. However, he also did the process by breaking the Sabbath, which is the death penalty. So if they just looked at the law and noted, all right, he broke one of the Ten Commandments, that's the death penalty, end of story. Finally, that's why it's brought in here, because he did it not only on top of that, but he also did it, verse 30 and 31, contextually as well.
Contextually.
He broke the Ten Commandments. He broke the Sabbath because God said not to.
Yeah.
So those are two compounding sins.
Well, the intention of it, too,
right,
I think, is different.
Yeah. Otherwise, there would be nothing about...
Imagine that, you know, this guy, he found out he didn't have enough wood, and it was like, oh, no, I've got to go get wood, even though it's a Sabbath. It doesn't seem like that was the case. This was intentional in contempt of Adonai to go do it and was going to do what he wanted to do no matter what.
Exactly. If you were that desperate for wood, there is no law that says, hey, neighbor... sit next to your campfire? May I cook on your stove as I need to? There's no law that says thou shalt not do that.
You know, my ox fell in the ditch. Would you please help me pull him out? Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Okay. When I read that through Christ, I was thinking, okay, why has that guy got his ox out there? And how did that ox get in that ditch? What was he doing? You know, my question is, he must have been plowing the field. He shouldn't have been, you know. But that's my thinking, you know. It's kind of a strange how an ox get in a ditch, I don't know. But he's got stuck. Not really in a ditch, but he got stuck. It couldn't move, you know. And on a Sabbath day. But anyway, that's another story. I want to we're going to run fast as we can here, if you don't mind. I want to talk about the... I want to talk first real quickly about
I'd like to
ask about that fringe. Should we wear
it? I'll get to that one. Yes.
Wear that all the time?
I'll get to that one in just a minute. According to Judaism, you never take it off. At least some of them, you never take it off. I want to go to verse 20. I think it's verse 20.
Is that a cake from the first of your ground meal?
Yeah. In Hebrew, it's kind of interesting. By the way, do you know what challah means? We have challah bread, right?
It refers to burnt, or because you take part of it and you burn it.
No.
Would it be holy?
Challah just means loaf.
Loaf.
Just loaf. Dollar beans. Rather than flat bread, it's a loaf. It's got rice. It's got yeast in it. It's got something that rises up. It's thick. It has a regular loaf of bread, like we would think of it. So when you think of the word challah, okay. And that's true. When you're getting to you're there, that's true. You take part of that and you are to offer it. Now why? We raise it up, and the Judaism did raise it up. Why is it important to raise the bread up? Because you can't give it the fire. What is it you raise up? We raise the bread up. What are we giving to God? A piece of it? Are we giving a loaf? What are we doing? Why would we do such a thing like that? Because the Jews do it? Or is there something here in the Torah that lets us have an insight about what to do about the bread?
By raising it up, are you recognizing his providing us?
Correct. Now, how many times before you started doing this, have you sometimes like, boy, you know, I'm the breadwinner. I bring home the bacon. I do all the work, woman. Why don't you do your job and cook it and shut up? It's my hands that brought this stuff up from the ground. My hands that made it. My hands that bring in the money. Well, you know. That basically, I'm being sarcastic here, but in a sense, the average human being, we earned our house, we earned all these things because, well, who would bring it about if I didn't, or if we didn't do it? If we didn't work, we wouldn't have anything, so it must be ours.
That's part of self, right?
Right. But when you raise that bread up, and why Jesus said, give us this day our daily bread. You're always acknowledging that it's God who has given it to you. He is a supplier of everything that comes from the ground up. It's kind
Psalm
of interesting.
Psalm 24:1 says that.
I'm sorry, what?
Psalm 24:1.
Well, I understand. What I'm saying is that why we raise the bread up and why we thank him for that, because he's the one that is given. Because he says, thank you. We say, who brings forth the bread from the earth, not from heaven, but from earth. And so it's a symbolism to knowing and acknowledge that he is the one that brings forth the bread. He is a provider for everything of our daily bread, our daily food, our daily needs. I thought it was an interesting thing to know that I read it here and I thought that'd be bring it back into it, because sometimes we as people, when before we started doing it, didn't even think about it. We thank God for a food, we thank him for giving us our bread, or we thank him for our dinner, we give, quote, grace, and all that kind of stuff before and afterwards. But the symbolism of holding that bread up is very, very biblical. Extremely biblical. It's just an acknowledgement that he's the one that gives us our daily bread. Or why we're still alive. Now the tzitzit. Got it real quick on the tzitzit. I'm going to read a comment about this. In verse 39. By the way, there's very strong biblical evidence that Jesus had the tzitzit on his, because he's the one that said the hypocrites have it too long, too big. They're arrogant with it. As they're supposed to be. Now it's very interesting here when it says, and you, verse 39, and you shall have the tassels or the tzitzit, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord your God and do them, that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined. Now, that's a complete, total statement. Now, I will be honest with you. I don't look at this and remember all of them, their commandments. All right. Now, in Hasidic sect of Judaism, they bring out, since there is no such word as it in Hebrew, it's got to be a male or female pronoun. And since the word it refers to what word? Tassel, which is a masculine word. Now they're saying it should be read. It's an interesting sidelight. And you shall have the tassels of the tzitzit that you may look upon him and remember all the commandments of the Lord. It's just an interesting play on words. The tzitzit itself is absolutely nothing. But when you look upon it, you look upon God, not upon the law, but upon God. Why? Because you have a tendency to follow harlotry to which your own hearts and your own eyes are inclined to do. A very fascinating terminology to looking at the tzitzit and saying, oh, it has more than just looking at it and say, oh yeah, I remember those 613. Yeah, right, sure. Yeah, I'm lucky if I remember the 10 in order. You know, but the honesty is you look upon him, and there, this is Hasidic, looking up to him and the commandments he is giving or has given, so that our hearts will not be inclined to trust in ourselves. We have a tendency not, we can't look at our own heart. We can't run our lives by our feelings. We can't run our lives by our heart. Heart is considered a seat of your government. What rules you, what makes you happy, what makes you, now if your heart is happy and great and you feel good, you know, what happens? Your whole body feels great. But if your heart is depressed, your heart is, you're down and you're disappointed, you're heartbroken, your whole body just breaks down. So a heart has a spiritually, as well as something God built within us. I don't completely understand it to the complete picture. But on the same side, it's kind of fascinating knowing that the tzitzit is to teach us and keep us our eye upon him who has given us the commandments that we will not go on to harlotry. It's a big word, isn't it? It's not a very good word.
My old King James says to go a whoring.
Whoring, a harlotry, whoreting, or committing spiritual adultery. And what does adultery mean? I've told you that before, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember?
Yes. Perverting the word of God.
Yeah. Literally twisting it. Christian.
What God has joined together, let no man put asunder.
Isn't it the same, similar as the things outside the door?
No, that's an entirely different thing. Right, oh, I see what you're saying.
Remembrance.
Yes, a remembrance.
It's a purpose. The purpose of it is a remembrance. When I look at the tzitzit or, you know, see it in my talith, I don't necessarily go, oh yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. I go through the Ten Commandments. Right.
Your eyes go upon God.
But it's a remembrance of, to hold on to God.
Right. And that's what the,
remember to focus on God.
So the physical thing that he says to do relates to the spiritual concept of look upon him and not your own self.
Right.
Rely upon his commandments and not yours.
Right.
That's all that refers to.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of an interesting analogy. Gives you a spiritual concept. Any more questions?
The more that you're surrounded by them, if you do wear them on your garments, the better chances you are to be focused on him more often. That's
In verse 40, continue on with the commandment, and that you may remember to do all my commandments and be holy before God.
Well, you know, there was some that I was just reading this commentary that someone was making on this particular chapter right here, and they were mentioning that they had taken this to mean that the tzitzit are meant to show other people that you are like part of God's commonwealth, so to speak. And because other people nowadays don't know what they mean, thus they become irrelevant.
Correct.
Yeah, because he'd missed the fact that it's not meant for other people, it's actually meant for you and not
not for other people to see. It's meant for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that's what it says.
I was just this past week, after a wonderful time of dropping my cell phone into the toilet.
I seen that on television as a joke, but I didn't know it really took place.
That's right. Yeah, so I ended up down at the Singular store. And, was in there, and this guy was, obviously, he's definitely said whatever came to his mind. He was talking about this and that and the other, just having a grand old time. And so he saw me, he's like, what are those things hanging from your belt there? I've seen those before. And don't like the Orthodox Jews wear those things? And he goes, yeah. And well, what are they? I've always wondered what they are. And I said, well, what they're meant to do is to remind you that, you know, you are, that's... to remember God and God's laws and that kind of thing, and that's the way that you should live your life. And he's like, oh. I'm like, who are you? You don't look like a Jew.
He said, no, I'm not. Yeah. No, it's just kind of interesting. There was one more comment I wanted to make. I can't remember what it was, but, the blue. And we talked about the colors of blue. Blue is that what comes from above. Blue is what is the color that represents that which comes from above. Because of why? Now listen carefully. When we look at the ocean, what do we see?
Blue.
And we look up the sky, what do we see?
Blue.
Now, what happened on the second day?
Blue is made.
He separated the waters.
Oh.
All right. So you have a complete picture that God is within both. It's a power that comes from above.